Okay, our theme has been all relationships are broken, and I heard somebody had come and was sharing with me because of some of the things we talked about. They had went and talked to somebody and shared with them some thoughts, and they were trying to convey that they didn't have a very good relationship, and the person says, well, we don't have a relationship, and the other person says, well, we do, it's just a bad relationship. So sometimes we only want to acknowledge what is a good relationship, and it doesn't always work that way. Our text verse is 2 Corinthians 5, verse 18, and all things are of God, who hath reconciled us to himself by Jesus Christ, and hath given to us the ministry of reconciliation, to wit, that God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself, not imputing their trespasses unto them, and hath committed unto us the word of reconciliation. So one of the things that we find here in our text verse is that we're reconciled to God by Christ, and because of this, we have the ministry of reconciliation. And if we have that ministry, then we have the ability to have good relationships based upon God and through the power of Jesus Christ. Our text verse tonight is Galatians 5:15.
But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. One of the things we've been talking about in relationships is reconciliation. If to have a relationship, we have to have reconciliation. And in Galatians, the fifth chapter, he says, if you bite and devour one another, take heed. Take heed. It's kind of interesting, those words. You know, you get the idea of bite and devour. You ever seen anybody gnawing on somebody else's leg? It kind of gives a picture, you know, as we attack one another with our words and with our intentions and those kinds of things, it's just like we go over and bite somebody. How would you like for me to come and bite you, Chuck? You'd probably slap me, wouldn't you? Probably get some kind of response. It's kind of interesting the way he worded it, bite and devour. It's not even appropriate behavior. It's not what we do with one another. And if that's the way we treat one another, you know, he says, take heed that ye be not consumed one another. You're going to destroy one another. You're going to destroy the relationship. You know, we want relationships. We like relationships. Yet we devour them. We consume them. Relationships often for many people are like throwaway products. We just use them up. And we think, well, if that relationship doesn't work, I'll just go work on another one. So instead of changing the pattern, it's a pretty powerful verse. Tonight, we're going to start, and I don't know if we'll finish them tonight. I'm thinking it'll probably take us 2 weeks, but we'll see. You had filled out some cards, and I really want to thank everybody for their participation. There was very good participation and some wonderful responses. One of the things it showed me was that people are concerned about their relationships. Relationships are important. They want to work at them. And the other thing it showed me is that we are in relationships that are developing. You know, problems and difficulties in relationships aren't the end of the relationship. They are the points that the relationship can develop and get better. Now, if we have these cards and we take a survey in 5 years and none of us have proceeded any farther and we have the same issues, that's not good. But we find that difficulties in relationships can cause us to grow, and we need to know how to work through them. Just a reminder on what the questions were, I put them up here just so we could remind you. It's been 6 weeks, a month, 2 months ago or so when we did these. So the questions that you answered is, what do you fight about? And we talked about that, and that's a pretty strong word. Some of us, you know, don't necessarily have issues in whatever relationship you're thinking of that maybe what you'd call a fight. Maybe it's what you disagree about. So some of you mark that out and put disagree. But issues of contention in a relationship. So we understand that, what we're talking about. Is there a topic that causes reoccurring arguments in relationships? One of the things that Joyce and I have found is that there was always a pattern, and there was things that would reoccur, and even at points that the arguments were so familiar that over such a long period of time that I would know what she was going to say, and she would know what I was going to say, and would always end up in the exact same spot. And I remember the frustration with that, that oftentimes when the pattern would start, I would say, let's, you know, stop. Let's just play a recording and let it have the fight and let's us go do something else. Now, so somehow you have to work through that, but sometimes we get caught in a cycle and we have a reoccurring issue that is very difficult for us to work through, and that's really important. Number one and number two, for many, was the same thing. Obviously, that kind of makes sense. And what subject would you like answered or addressed during the series? And three ended up being somewhat of the same thing. So they ended up somewhat coming across the same issues. Now, I debated on how to deal with these, and I know that I wanted to give you some form of comfort that what you put on here I wouldn't just read and then read your name. I don't have names, but we are kind of a small group, and some of the questions, some of the answers are worded in such a way that's going to be pretty easy to figure out who's who. And so one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that there were some very common things that reoccurred. So we're going to talk about, instead of some of the things in very specific terms, we're going to talk about them in generic terms. And if you say, well, he's not addressing my question, yes, I am. You just need to listen. If you remember what you put on here, trust me, we're going to address those things, but I'm going to try to do it in a little more generic terms. But and then if we don't get it addressed, I'd be happy to do some follow-up if you want to let me know. But I think we'll do okay. One of the things that's kind of interesting is I've seen many, many surveys over the years, many different ways to ask the question, and there are three things that reoccur over and over again whenever somebody is asked the question, what is wrong with your marriage? What are the difficulties in your marriage? What kind of issues did you have to work through to have a good marriage? There's all different kinds of ways to answer those questions. There are three topics that always end up in the top three or the top five. And these almost always end up in the top three. Can you guess what they are? What would end up being in the top three? What are your top three?
Money.
Money. Almost always number one. Brother Hunter and I have talked about this, and I think in Sunday school he's going to address some issues about money. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about money and fighting about money, and I hope that Brother Hunter is going to talk a little bit about how do we manage money, what does the Bible say about managing money, those kinds of things. So I'm not going to really get into that kind of stuff, but I think there's some wise things we as children of God can do in money. So I'm excited about Brother Hunter is going to do a little more than just what I'm going to do about fighting about money and having disagreements over money and some of those things. We're going to talk about that, but not so much about how we might invest and some other things. So he's going to cover some of those things. Money, that's one of them. What else? In-laws. Yes. That, you know, that's always in the top three. In-laws. I've asked my son-in-law to come so we could show you how that works. In-laws is...
In-laws is always the control.
I have no problem with that. How about you?
pray about it and get back to you.
Yes?
Do you know the difference between an in-law and an outlaw?
Tell me.
An outlaw is wanted.
Yeah, there you go. And we could probably go on and on with some of those jokes. There you go, there you go. So we're going to talk about in-laws. That's on the list. In-laws, outlaws, whatever you want to call them.
Children.
Children? You know, children is on lists of five. It's often in the three, but it's not. It didn't make my list of three. It's there. It's one. It's up there. It's going to be right close. But that's not the one I chose. So that didn't show up much on our list. Can you think of the other one? I know. It's the thing we don't want to talk about. Who just said it? Somebody over here said it. Okay. So somebody said it. So these are the top three. Money, intimacy, and if you look real close, sex, right? Okay. It's the thing we don't want to talk about, right? It's you know, one of those private things. It did show up on our list some, so not as much as money and in-laws. Those were the two that you were really, you know, you were willing to talk about with many, many other topics. Those are the top three, and I want to focus on those tonight. I don't know how far we'll get. We're going to actually also look at the top 10 that often occur, and that will cover just about everything on everybody's list. Money. So, in dealing with a biblical perspective on money, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some covet after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. That's a pretty powerful verse. Now, money isn't the problem. What's the problem in this verse? The love of money. And it is the root. It may not be the problem, but it is the root. Now, oftentimes, we in relationships, we fight over money. But that's not often the real problem. What can be the real problem? You know, the root is money, but what is the problem? What could be the problem? Selfishness? Control? What else?
Coveting after stuff.
So one of the issues is that we should look after the needs of one another. One of the things that I've seen often in relationships is somebody wants something and they're worried about what they want. New cars, TVs, all these kinds of things, and to the exclusion of the needs of the family. And do you think the couple's going to fight over that? Absolutely. How can you not cause contention, or there not be contention in a situation like that? So we find that money is an issue. Now, one of the things that's kind of interesting, Brother Hunter had, I can't remember where you got it, but the average, if you could have more money, the people who answered that question, the average was they wanted $33,000 more. What you're currently making, everybody wanted more. For some people, that's double, you know, what they might make. Didn't I recently see that the median income in Oregon was like 38 to 40? I mean, it's right in there somewhere. So for most of us, that's average, or, you know, not much above average. And so, you know, we're saying that we need almost double to be content. One of the things, though, those that are making 60 and 70,000 are also wanting more. That's the issue with money, is oftentimes it's never enough. One of the things that we need to learn in dealing with money isn't the problem. The love of money, you know, it's the root. The problem in relationships, one of the issues is we need to learn contentment. And we as children of God, if we don't have contentment, we're always coming back to this, and we're needing more stuff. And so there's that issue. In dealing with money, everybody should have a budget. I know we don't like to talk about those things. We want to have enough money that we can just live on, but very few of us live in that kind of reality. And so you have to have some kind of a budget. If not, what's going to happen is at the end of the month, you're not going to have enough to do what is important. And, you know, setting those priorities in a budget, putting God first. We talked about Malachi, the third chapter, in dealing with tithing, putting God first. Romans 13:8. I don't want to talk too much about this verse, but it alludes to debt and how dangerous debt can be. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth one another hath fulfilled the law. Debt for young couples can get people in trouble. For older couples, it can get us in trouble. We just really need to be careful with debt and the response. Digging yourself a hole and it can create issues. And then the third verse is 1 Corinthians 4:2. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. This verse shows that the issue in dealing with money, if our attitude is right, I think it can help the situation with money. Money can cause problems, but one of the things we forget is we are stewards. Everything we have is God's, and we're just stewards of it. And we forget that concept, and so it's mine, 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 and then with what is mine, we want more, 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 and it becomes the issue of he that has the most toys at the end wins. That's kind of our mentality. And we as children of God can really get sucked in to that issue. So now let's talk about money in regards to couples and our response. Now, on the cards, there were many that just had money, and some had bills, monies and bills. So I'm going to assume some things that as Joyce and I, it's kind of interesting that we're kind of like most couples, that as we started, the amount, when we were first married, the amount of money that we lived on was a much, much less than what it is today. I would hate to go back and live on what we used to live on. You know, looking back, you know, today it'd be easy to say I couldn't do that. But we did it. And, you know, when we first came on the field, I had a hard time getting a job. The mission had agreed to pay us $150. The church had, at St. Helens, I was missionary being sponsored, had agreed to pay us $150. Our rent was $305 or $310, I can't remember. It was $5 or $10 above what I knew we had coming in. And for 6 months, I didn't find a job. And so, fortunately, the mission and the church and others were generous. But we lived on a very shoestring budget. We had a house, a roof over our head. And those taught us some very good lessons. It taught us that we could live on a whole lot less. One of the things that I remember from my parents who gone through the Depression and very hard times, and I know many of you who are older, maybe have experienced it or had parents that experienced it. And they were things that they talked about and tried to convey, but until you experience it, it's a little bit different. And put some of those things into perspective. Oftentimes, we don't think we can live on less, and we can. And we need to try to live on what God provides for us. And the only way that I know to do that is a budget. And if you write a budget, one of the things, Joyce and I have done budgets, and I have helped people write budgets, one of the things that I have seen is it's real easy that when you put it on paper, you start putting stuff down, and then you don't plan on living. You know, once in a while, one of the things we talked about that was really important once a week, once a month was what? Date night. Budget it. Plan on it. Now, date nights don't have to be expensive. Okay, other things that you're going to need for entertainment and for other things, you should budget those and plan for those. Emergencies. Brother Hunter, I'm sure when he talks, is going to talk about the need for savings and planning for retirement and different ways that we can and should and need to budget those things. But in dealing with money and dealing with the things that we fight about, one of the issues is you might have somebody who is a saver and somebody who is a spender. If you have two savers, you don't fight too much about money, because they're wanting to save and, you know, there's not a lot of things to spend. If you have two spenders, you don't necessarily fight too much because you're always spending money and you never have anything to fight about because there's no money left, because if it ever comes in, it's gone. Oftentimes what happens is, you know, if you have a saver and a spender. The other issue is, one of the things that can happen is somebody takes responsibility for the bookkeeping. And that's usually one person, sometimes the wife, sometimes the husband. And then the issue is, because that person's the bookkeeper and they know how much money you have, they end up being the money police. Not intentionally. I know, Joyce and I, not that we ever had a fight about it, but one of the things that when I was working and pastoring, I didn't have time to do it, and Joyce kept the money, and I often didn't have a clue as was there money, and if there was something whether it was something we needed or something I wanted, you know, it was real easy to go to her and say, "Do we have money for this?" And it really put her in an awkward position, because she then would say yes or no, and if it was something that she didn't think I needed, it would be easy for her to say, "Oh, we really don't have money for that." And it put her in a very awkward position, and not really a fair position. Now, she was very good about that, and we worked through that and came up with some other ways to do that. But one of the things is sometimes we put ourselves in a position to fail. And so if you have one person, you know, managing the money, it's not fair to make them the controller of the money. Does that make sense? You know, you need to know where that is at. There's so many other things we could talk about. I talked about some of the main things that I wanted to talk about. Anybody have any questions about money that I could answer specifically in dealing with difficulties or issues with money? If you're struggling with money, it's usually lack of money, right? Most people aren't struggling because they have too much. Oftentimes, it's because we've made poor decisions, right? So one of the things we need to start doing is making good decisions, and the only way I know to do that is start budgeting, living on a budget. It can be painful for a while. Well, Hunter, you look like you're about to say something. You have a thought?
Lack of money is one issue. Spending more money than you have is another issue. They're two separate issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So lack of money due to different things.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes we overextend. That creates a whole other set of challenges.
And most of the time, we can live on whatever we make. Now, there are such things not, you know, below a living, you know, level. But, you know, we have to curtail where we're at, and you're absolutely right. And one of the issues is, you know, we don't curtail that. We just keep going. And debt can be an issue. There's all kinds of ways we try to get around how much we make, and it just makes matters worse. Absolutely. Yes?
I think wealth can create as much tension as lack of wealth. You know, you see a lot of couples struggling because there's such a focus on the material possessions that they're accumulating. Either they're working too many hours to keep making all the payments on the boat and the house and the cars, and you know that you can create a situation where you literally have more money than you collectively have sense.
Yeah, and you know, we can get that money becomes a priority, and so our career, and those are two of the other issues. Overcommitment and career and success can also be issues that cause problems in marriage. Absolutely. Go ahead, Joyce.
It becomes like most of the areas that we talked about, it's a matter of setting our priorities to, and money forces us to do that when you're dealing with, and usually in couples we've seen that have real issues, that once they get the priorities straightened out, the money issues tend to resolve themselves. But it's often it's the relationship that it's a more of a control, and it's a power, and it's a struggle over different goals, different aims, and different priorities, and how can I control? It's often a control issue. When,
yes.
When, and once those issues can be taken care of, some of the money issues tend to go away.
And that's why I started with the verses and dealing with, you know,
contentment and understanding stewardship. Those will take care of lots of issues right there. Brother Jim, you had a thought?
Something happened recently, but the there's got to be a balance between stewardship of the money, the loving money. As a Christian, sometimes I would think that in a certain situation, a person is a Christian, and they say, you know, well, I don't want to be a lover of money, but that doesn't take them away from the responsibility they have of being a steward of the money that they have. They can't waste it just because of that. Well, I don't love this, I'll just give it away. I mean, they have a responsibility to take care of bills and stuff like that, so they have to be a steward. So there's a balance between love of money or not loving money and being a steward.
Yeah, we can't shirk the responsibility that we have on a daily basis, of being a good steward.
Absolutely. Brother Hunter?
One of the things about money, too, that I think is really important is even if it stretches you to do it, is to have some type of a rainy day fund. Because when you live sometimes from paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes that may be all you do, but it's the unexpected that happens that creates the tension. And you panic, what do I do? How do I solve this problem? So trying to be proactive and knowing that those things are going to happen in life.
And I would absolutely agree, and our cards reflect that, you know, some people put money and some people even put bills. You know, so the issue is, at the end of the month, and you're right, and so those planning ahead things are so important in how we do that. In rainy day funds and some of those things, you know, there are numbers. Some people, I just heard a thing that a guy in money had said that everybody should have at least $1,000 in the bank. And he gave a number it was over a third of Americans have less than $1,000 that they could get quick access to. So in an emergency, you know, you have a flat tire, you don't have money to go fix the tire or your transmission, is that just those very basics, you know, and a rainy day fund should even be more than that if possible. And those are the things that I think Brother Hunter will help us with, and, you know, what does a budget look like and what are some of those things. But absolutely. And some of those things are practical. So having a good plan and changing the way we look at it, understanding contentment, that we can live on what God provides us. Now, there is such a thing as living below the poverty line and not, you know, being able, you got to be able to pay for rent, but you don't have to have a mansion, or make a house payment, but you don't have to have a mansion. You know, you have to be able to buy food, but you don't have to have steak. And so some of those issues are dealing with contentment. And I got a couple of people who want to talk. Go ahead.
I've heard through various people, you know, try to have, some people even say 6 months, but at least 3 months worth of income that are your expenses to be able to get access to.
And I would agree with that. And this guy was addressing people who had zero. And he was just saying, you know, zero is way beyond. So if I start telling you 6 months, you know, you're going to look at 6 months' income and you're just going to say, I'll never get there, so you keep living like you are. So, and I agree, 3 months, 6 months, and there's different philosophies. But the issue is, we got to start somewhere. And absolutely, because you never know when you're going to get hurt, when you're going to be sick. There's so many of those things. And those are some of the things I hope Brother Hunter can help us with in the specifics.
No. I'm excited about just the topic. So,
and you talked some about the contentment issue, and that it's prevalent in our society, and it seems to be getting worse and worse. That everyone thinks they have to have it all, and they have to start with it all. And young families start, and they expect to have everything that their parents have worked a lifetime to accumulate. And it's becoming more and more. When we first started out, it was like it was okay that we didn't expect to have what our parents had, but we knew we would get there eventually. But more and more, it is the expectation that we will start with all of those. Our luxuries are considered their necessities almost.
And the other thing that's happening is the luxuries, you know, those must-have items,
where we, you know, a TV was $100, $200, you know, a really nice TV was, you know, $300, $400 when we first got married. Today, you know, a nice TV is $3,000, $4,000, right? And so these things that, you know, and then you got to have your iPods, and you got to have your computers, and you got to have your laptops. And these things are thousands of dollars, each one of those things that we want to have, these toys. And it's all these things that's draining from the livelihood and the income of the family.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I think about is, again, 30 years ago, we didn't have to have cable, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't, I mean, all these things, computers, all these things in the home now didn't exist. And it's added to the bottom line.
And the bottom line, that's one thing. What we think we have to live is cable, internet, phone, and you can't live without the cell phones. You just add up what the basics are, that's a killer. And those are things, and these things, each one, hundreds of dollars each. Cell phones, you know, you can't get a service plan for under $50. If you got a $50 service plan, you're doing good, you know. And many have service plans that are $100 because we want the minutes. And, you know, it's we can't live without our cell phone, but can we live with it because of what it costs us and those kinds of issues? Sister Betty, and then I'll come back.
Well, something that you hit on earlier when you were talking about you and Joyce when you started out, there sometimes, you know, there is that time in a marriage that maybe you're being good stewards, either something happened or in your case, you're just starting out. But there comes that time when your faith really comes into play here, and you have to stop. And you know, we can worry a lot about money, and that's a lot of what, you know, one person or the other in the relationship is really worried. Well, what's going to happen? How are we going to do this? You know, worried about tomorrow. And that's when, you know, our faith has to step in. And if we are being good stewards and we're where God wants us to do, or we're doing what He wants us to do and where He wants us, then, you know, sometimes we have to step back and watch Him provide. And that is a wonderful way to have your faith strengthened. And, you know, sometimes that's as good for us, but we can mess all that up just by not stepping back and, you know, fighting with one another and saying, well, you need to do more of this, or you need to work more hours, or, you know, whatever. But just let God provide. You know, sure, we got to do everything that we need to do.
Right.
The stewardship is extremely important. But still, there sometimes God will just step in and provide in other ways, or maybe just literally the money is just there.
And that's the amazing thing for Joyce and I, how He did just provide. And what a wonderful lesson. At the time, it was very frustrating, you know, but looking back, and it was amazing how that, you know, being a missionary, mission would step up for the church. And, you know, when we thought we had just no, you know, way to take care of it, God provided. And He will do that. And what a wonderful lesson it's been for us through our whole marriage, that we know that God will provide. And so the issue is, all we have to do is stop focusing on the money issue. One of the things is, you know, do I need this? Do I work to live, or do I live to work? You know, that's a very simple change of words. Do I live to work, or do I work to live? And that income part and the money part just kind of flows around that whole issue. I saw a couple other hands.
But it just that, you know, money can be an idol easily.
Yeah.
And that all comes into play. The phrase that you just gave, that's, you know, what's my idol here?
Yeah. What's my priorities? What's my... Any other thoughts?
You know, I think the life of Job teaches us that even the most faithful steward can suffer from a business failure, a medical crisis, or a family tragedy. Those are the things that most often wipe out somebody, even who's doing good at the time. Then one of these things happens, or a combination of these. You know, you're ready for you're ready for business failure, but you're not ready for business failure and a major illness at the same time, or a child who gets sick, or and when these things pile up on you. But I think that's when we learn the truth of the verse that says, godliness with contentment is great gain. We need to learn how to be poor or to be wealthy and be able to let God teach us the different lessons that those states of life can give us. But where I think we get in trouble is sometimes we will blame the consequences of our choices on the devil or on God. We'll say, well, I'm broke and I'm in debt because the devil is out to get me, when in fact, maybe it's not the devil, maybe it's your spending habit.
Bad choices. And we've talked about choices, haven't we? Absolutely. Yeah.
One thing that to consider too, perhaps, is when you do the budget and maybe sit down, roll out, and then go back and see if there's agreement on what the definition of a need or a want is in each one of those items. That becomes a powerful discussion.
Yeah, I didn't really say it, but one of the things that when you do that budget, it's not one person doing the budget and saying, okay, you will live with this. You know, that's a control issue. So the budget is that everybody's in agreement. And what a need and a want is different. And you have to also provide for, if at all possible, some other things. You know, you have to provide for, lunches or dinners or some of those kinds of things. Absolutely. And what that discussion is about what a need and a want is going to look different for each person. Thoughts? Any other comments? Yes.
Sometimes it's very humiliating, but sometimes we need to go ask for help because, quite frankly, recently we saw somebody blow a lot of money away, and they didn't have to. They just, instead of thinking they could do it on their own, if they just asked for some help, they could have saved themselves a lot.
Absolutely. Somebody, yeah.
I found one of the fighting issues is the culprit that's doing the money thing blames the spouse because it's their fault, it's not my fault because of the decisions I made.
Absolutely, and that's where you get into the blame game and where, if you would stop making these poor decisions, we wouldn't be in this situation. And absolutely, and that's where you got to come to an agreement over what is needs,
what is wants, what is the necessity of living day to day, and then as there's money left over, we can do some of these other things. Absolutely. And that's where the only way I know how to resolve those issues is by a budget. I know we don't like to live that kind of life, but that's the only way I know. Unless you just make so much that you don't have to worry about a budget, and I don't see too many of us in the room that we have to live some kind of a budget. That's the only way I know to make that recommendation. And there has to be an agreement on that budget.
Especially when first marriages are just starting out, come with such different expectations of what. I mean, money is not just the actual dollars that you have. It's the who controls, who earns, how is it spent, and what are the priorities, and who sets it, and who determines how it's spent. And that's probably where the fights come through as you learn to work through, well, my parents always did it this way, or this is the way I think it should be done. And coming to terms in the relationship on setting the priorities and how it works and working out the mechanics of how it all works and so that each party's heard and involved.
One of the things I've heard that's really good with and some of you guys have done that with me in dealing with money is that anything over $100, you agree on that. You don't go spending more than $100 unless you agree.
Now, you may have exceptions to that rule, but you don't go out and buy something for $500 and say, oh, I thought we needed it. Oh, you really needed this new set of golf clubs. You just really needed this big screen TV. You really? No, okay. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry if I got you somebody in trouble.
Somebody was going to say something.
You know, you just came back, though, to a point you started at the beginning with that is really one of the biggest issues for fighting, and that is multiple lines of credit. This leads to more. I mean, I've probably talked to more couples who had this problem with money than any other because, you know, the Proverbs 22:7 says the borrower is the servant of the lender. Well, if you've got 15 credit cards, 3 car payments, 2 mortgages, and you start, you know, your TV is bought on credit, your computer's bought on credit. Well, now it's not a question of serving 2 masters; you're serving 33 masters. And the wife has the masters that she wants to serve, the Bond Macy's card or the Mervyn's card. The husband wants, you know, to keep making the boat payment. And when it comes to which master are we going to pay this month, you know, then they're, well, you know, maybe we just have a society that believes too much in living on tomorrow's money.
And one of the things about that, and I'm probably saying something everybody knows, but if you're living on credit and using credit, go through and just add up your finance charges. I'm not saying that credit can't be a good thing. There's some things that it's kind of hard in our society to buy that you don't do it on credit. A house. I mean, how many of us are going to be able to, you know, buy a house, a car? We don't have to have a new car. Maybe we buy a used car and we can't pay cash. But there are some things, but we really got to be careful. You know, many credit cards now, is it 21%? And did I hear something like 23%? Is it 21? Okay. So, I mean, you start adding that up, that just...
And they're so easy to get now. They didn't used to be. You used to have to have money to prove you could pay it. Now you can just give you credit cards to...
And they have a sponsor to get money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was started now.
Well, people then use credit cards to pay their credit cards.
Right.
They're just giving such a big one.
It's, yeah. So, you know, there's so many things, and more things than what I can cover, more what I wanted to try to cover was the fighting about it. And, you know, you almost have to talk about budgets, and we've done that. Not smart to live on credits, trying to get out of that trap. But really, oftentimes the thing I found when we fight about money, it's not always the money, it's the underlying issues. The selfishness things that we want to spend that we probably don't necessarily need, but we want, we're not living within a budget.
Marvin, along that line, don't you think a lot of it, and we keep mentioning priorities, but our spouse, whoever we're fighting with, that's who our priority should be, and not where we're placing priorities. And I think when we fight, you know, we're trying to place a higher priority on anything else other than where our priority should be.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things that I use so often in counseling is your spouse is not your enemy. You know, and we treat them as our enemy, like I have to go through you to buy whatever I want and you're the enemy. I have to conquer you in order to do this. And that's, you know... What you're suggesting is, you know, it's a team thing and we're not the enemy. Absolutely. Good point. Any other thoughts?
I see one of the problems with money is it seems to be, what we've already touched on several times, is pride. It's keeping up with the neighbors and Jones. You've got to have what they have. So, you know, it's kind of a pride issue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I heard a radio show about 2 months ago where a fellow was talking about personal finance and somebody said, why keep up with the Joneses? They're heading for bankruptcy court or divorce court. It's just a question of where they go first.
Yeah, and one of the problems is sometimes we're keeping up with the Joneses and they make 3 times as much as we are. I mean, you know, so we got to live within the plan that God has for our life. And God does have a plan for our life.
Amen.
Thoughts? We're going to stop there. I was really hoping we could get farther, but great comments, and I hope that was helpful. The one thing I will say is that we are planning some more information. Brother Hunter is going to put some stuff together, and we'll go from there. So whatever I didn't answer, Brother Hunter will take care of everything else. So how's that? But there's so many practical things out there. You know, in dealing with
preparation. What's that? There you go. There you go. Any last thoughts on dealing with money?
I know I left us in, you know, hanging out there with the other two topics. We will get to those. We're just not going to get to them tonight because I don't want to buzz through them. We're already at 7 o'clock, and I want to give fair time to the other two topics also. Well,
thanks for talking about money all night and not getting to in-laws this week.
You know, that's how I just kept stretching that out.
He was talking about money. When I bought my pickup, the young friend where I was working asked me why did I pay cash. And we sat down and figured out if I'd have paid the minimum down, stretched it out at the maximum payments, I'd been paying $13,000 more for that truck than I did for cash.
Yeah, so you almost buy the truck twice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing with credit is that, you know, and some things are so much that we have, like a house. You know, there was a time, and I don't know where it is now, that when you bought a house, that you, by the time you were done with it, you could have bought two houses or three houses. But that's, you know, we don't have enough money to pay for it outright, so something. But when you buy something for $100 and you pay for that thing three different times, that doesn't make sense. Sometimes, and what happens if we're so far in debt, you have to start plugging away. You have to have a budget. That's the only way I know to fix that. But that doesn't stop the fight. What stops the fight is understanding where money fits in, understanding the commitment issue, understanding the stewardship issue, and then we can start having some peace in dealing with knowing what is a need and what is a want and what the family can live with it. That living within our means will help that situation immensely. Any other thoughts before we dismiss? So we will take care of the other two hopefully next week. And then I also have a list of 10 that we're going to look at. Many of you know Joyce and I are going to be gone the end of September. And if we don't get to it before, we'll pick up and finish up the relationship process when we get back, starting in October. Any last thoughts? Thank you so much for your time and your input. Let's all stand.